ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that each week uncovers the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find us at the front of a parade, covered in feathers and moving quite energetically. Well, I say a parade, it's more of a peloton of hate, and full disclosure, those feathers aren't stuck on with cosmetic glue, but the finest tarmac in Christendom and a left hook from a couple of the White Company's finest pillows. For clarification, non-UK listeners, the White Company is one of the finest purveyors of upholstery, bed clothing and couture on these islands, except in this instance where it's very much what your first thought went to. Oh dear. Safe to say, the inaugural Worst Foot Pride has not gone to plan. Our flag is a mess too. It's a cross between a Star of David, a shamrock and a cross on a monochrome rainbow flag decorated with dead dogs and encyclopedias. Whilst there's been quite the argument amongst our paraders as to which is actually the worst foot, meaning that they all walked three steps and then crashed into one another. Still, at least we made sure we got all that sweet, sweet corporate sponsorship in Bitcoin. Right, lads? Anyway... with me is the pride to my other six deadly sins, Barry McStay.
Oh, you get to have all the fun ones, though. You get lust and gluttony.
Yeah.
Just stuck with pride. It's the worst deadly sin.
Yeah, but the thing is, lust and gluttony are just posh names for saying, hi, I'm Ben, I'm fat and I'm horny.
Which you are. Lockdown has lockdown has been getting to you.
My horniness has got nothing to do with lockdown, and I was doing pretty good at weaning myself off snacks. At the start of lockdown, me and my wife, whenever we went out to the supermarket, we would come back laden with snacks.
Yeah.
And I've had to get myself off the sugar. No, I think I can describe my lockdown physique as robust.
Good. You're own independent person. You can use whatever, you can identify however you like, be it robust or otherwise.
All right, well, you've invented the eighth deadly sin of being a cunt to your podcast host, so stop it.
That is a hate crime in the month of June, which is, of course, is Pride Month, Ben. Yes, let me introduce our guest, our special guest for this special Pride-themed episode of Worst Foot. Our guest this week is an LGBT activist, a chartered accountant and finance director of Pride in London. Basically, if you want money to throw a big party, he's the man to turn to. His purse is full of pink pounds. Misses. He's the there's going to be a lot of innuendos in this show. I feel pretty sure about that. He's the co-host of the podcast Queer Talk, bringing you fortnightly doses of positive news stories and fabulous interviews. It's like the anti-Worst Foot Forward, but less gay. He's also spoken and written about his experiences as a gay Muslim man, navigating a religious upbringing and breaking up with his family. He's even joked about giving Harry and Meghan advice on doing just that. Next up, you'll have the Queen asking him how to break up with Prince Andrew. It's the Prince of Pride and a man I'm proud to call my friend, Mohsin Mia.
Hi, guys. I love that intro. It's the best intro I've ever had.
It's great, yeah. Just before we started recording the show, Mohsin sent a very sort of chartered accountant-heavy intro bio.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't dwell on the chartered accountant finance bit, but you actually made me sound like I was a royal advisor.
Yeah,
that's a big promotion.
you, Jenny Bond, Nicholas Witchell, presume you all just hang out together.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm actually going to focus on it for a second because my dad's a chartered accountant.
Bye, listeners.
Bye.
Yeah. Say bye to everyone.
Yeah, we've lured you in with the promise of glitter and gayness, but we're actually just going to talk about how many letters do you have after your name?
Do you add the BA from university?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Then I've got a CA after that. Back as a chartered accountant.
Just that?
And that's it. Four letters, yeah. Oh, and then hopefully I'll get an OBE. That's the next one.
Hang on, so you've got a BA after your name and a CA. Can I? Yeah, why have you not got the nickname Chew in that case?
Funnily enough, I don't actually use the letters. I don't go, hi, I'm Mohsin.
B-A-C-A.
BAC also sounds like an abbreviation, like a text speak thing.
BRB.
Yeah, like BRB or LOL or any of those. What does BACA stand for?
Well, it's the same letters as all cops are bad. So maybe you're like a campaigning anagram.
No, you're the Yoda version. Bad all cops are.
Yeah, if Yoda supported Black Lives Matter.
bad old cops are.
Mohsin, we always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world. You're clearly very good at finding money where others might not, and bringing a dose of queer fabulousness to the podcast world. What are you not so good at?
I've always been kind of good at everything a little bit. I'm a bit of a generalist, but there's one thing that I've never managed to lock down, and that's hand-eye coordination. just in general. Like, I was going to say dancing, but actually I'm just bad at hand-eye coordination, full stop. Like, I will walk into door frames on a regular basis.
Oh, like...
Yeah, like, I've got a massive bruise on my shin right now. And you think it's from cycling, because I've just started cycling, but actually, it's just because I hit the bed really hard.
Oh, wow, someone's getting some action in lockdown.
That's the saddest bit.
Are you dyspraxic or are you just shit?
I'm just really, really shit.
Oh, mate.
There's a lot of brain power happening, so it doesn't leave much power for my body.
Right, of course.
That's the excuse. But when I was younger, I was always terrible at skateboarding. Like, I had a skateboard and I had to just throw it away because I didn't know how to use it. And then as I got older, I tried ice skating, and they only give you 1 hour, and it's not enough time to learn how to ice skate. And then you only get the next hour back next year.
Yeah.
You know, and the ice rink opens up again.
It's also quite hard because you can't just have the rink to yourself. There's like other people there as obstacles, like little children doing pirouettes, like sassy little bastards that they are.
Yeah, they make me look really bad because I'm like clinging onto the corner. And like, the corner is the bit where you can kind of skate and then grab the end again.
There's two situations you do that particular walk. One is when you're trying to ice skate, and there's the other is when you're trying to navigate your bedroom in the dark without turning the light on.
Week, ladies and gentlemen, since, as Barry said, this month is Pride Month, we are unveiling our rainbow coloured version of the podcast, and we will be talking about how not to do a Pride. Yeah. And Barry, you're going to start us off on discovering what the world's worst Pride may be.
I had a glance at some Pride tie-ins, which I know you've talked about in your podcast, actually, you must see, because you talked about the Marks and Spencer sandwich, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the LGBT sandwich.
Yes. Which,
you'd think LGBT would stand for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, but in Marks and Spencer's, it stands for lettuce, guacamole, bacon, and tomato.
All this time, Ben, I have been guacamole, and you never knew.
Yeah.
I'm coming out now, officially, on the podcast.
Yeah, it was just like the perfect example of... capitalism gone a bit too far.
Yeah.
Every year, and I see it a lot because I work for Pride in London, we get criticism about Pride Month being like taken over by companies and not being part of the spirit of Pride, which is originally a protest from back in the 70s. And then you get these kind of campaigns where companies are sometimes they're trying to do good and raise money for charities by doing these kind of products. And other times they're just kind of what we call pinkwashing. Where you just stick a rainbow on a product and then you hope you get better sales.
Yeah.
So seeing something like the LGBT sandwich, I think it just caused everyone to be like, ooh, why? What has this got to do with Pride?
That's what happened with Pink Floyd, of course. They, you know, they released Dark Side of the Moon and it was really just a line going into a triangle and they're like, oh, man, we need to go for the pink pound. And eventually they just splashed a rainbow on there. It's got nothing to do with physics.
No.
You could literally pink wash if you wanted to, because you could buy a Listerine mouthwash in a Pride flag. Presumably doesn't taste of mint, but a slightly umami, proteiny flavour. The gift that literally no one asked for is how this list describes a MAGA hat in Pride colours. Yeah, embroidered with Trump in rainbow lettering as well.
Oh, I've seen that. I've seen that. That's such an oxymoron. Made by a moron.
Yeah. I then started reading about gay symbology and pride flags and things like that. Before I get to the pride flag itself, I just read about other things that used to represent gay people. The pink triangle was the symbol that the Nazis used to stitch onto their uniforms in concentration camps. And that was adopted by the early pride movements as the symbol of the gay liberation cause before the pride flag was invented. So they were using pink triangles. They were also using the lambda, the Greek letter. Lowercase lambda for a while. In Boston, there was a public ad campaign to increase visibility for gay people led by two people called Daniel Thaxton and Bernie Towal, which used a lavender rhinoceros.
What?
A lavender rhinoceros.
In the early 70s, they said they chose the rhinoceros because it is a much maligned and misunderstood animal like gay people.
Is that because it's supposed to be like a real-life unicorn?
Maybe, maybe, because they were using unicorns were associated with the movement even then, so they may have sort of tried to use that. And also lavender, because it's a mix of pink and blue, so it's mixing both the traditional genders, if you like.
I think the lavender colour is also the original logo for the Gay Liberation Front.
Yes.
With the purple fist.
Yeah, exactly.
Which also takes inspiration from Black Panther movement, which was happening around the same time.
Yeah, a lot of the big LGBT movements sort of all originated in the civil rights here in the 60s. Mm. The green carnation, if you go back a bit earlier, in the 19th century England, people would wear a green carnation. In fact, there was a gay bar in London. I'm not sure if it's still open. I think it closed in Soho, called the Green Carnation. Apparently, Oscar Wilde used to wear one in his lapel quite a lot.
I didn't know that's where the name came from.
Yeah.
I used to go there. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my friends told me a thing about, in, I guess it'd be a similar time to Oscar Wilde, and I think in Edwardian times there was a whole... language of symbology of wearing different coloured handkerchiefs.
In fact, would you like to learn about the handkerchief code?
Do you have the code on you?
I do have it. handkerchief code, some people say it's older than that, but the modern handkerchief code is a bit newer. It's not a Victorian thing. It's from the 70s, widely used by gay and bisexual men. There are various suggestions of where it came about. One of them, for example, is that bandanas were worn by gay men, but the origin of wearing bandanas was during the gold rush in San Francisco, when, because of a shortage of women, men would dance with each other in square dances, and they'd have a code where a man wearing the blue bandana took the male part and the man wearing a red bandana took the female part in the dance. And the bandanas were normally worn around the arm or hanging from a belt or in a back pocket. The modern hanky code is thought to have maybe started in New York in late 1970. A journalist for Village Voice joked that instead of wearing keys, which is also a popular thing to indicate whether you're a top or a bottom, it'd be more efficient to subtly announce your particular sexual focus by wearing different colour hankies. I found this table, which is from a list from Larry Townsend's book, The Leatherman's Handbook 2, the 1983 second edition. First of all, which pocket would you wear your hanky in if you're top or the dominant or active partner?
I'm gonna go for right.
It's the left. You're the right if it's the bottom. And
I always got confused. What's the gay side and the right and the
yeah side. but these are both. They're either.
Yeah,
presumably,
they're both gay.
Presumably, you wear it hanging out of your ass crack if you're versatile. and then the different colours, yes, suggest you're into different things. So. Black hanky? What do you think that is?
You're into leather?
S&M,
okay.
Grey is bondage. Yellow?
Fisting?
It's water sports. Fisting is red, apparently.
Figures.
Yeah. Anal sex and oral sex are dark blue and light blue, respectively. Brown?
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's scat.
No, really?
That's scat or poo play.
There's a colour in the rainbow for everything.
There really is. And green is if you're a prostitute or hustling.
Huh.
Money. Yeah.
Oh, money, of course. Yeah, and if you wear a white handkerchief knotted on top of your head, it means that you haven't had any for 10 years or on holiday in the Costa del Sol.
Yeah. I read about the Pride flag, originally devised by an artist called Gilbert Baker. Yep. So he met Harvey Milk, and Harvey Milk wanted a new symbol for the gay community. They'd used the pink triangle, but Harvey Milk didn't like, and if people don't know who Harvey Milk is, go do your own research. We're gonna reference a lot of things, so if you don't know what they are, just go look it up. He didn't like the pink triangle as a symbol of the gay movement because it was associated with such a dark chapter in gay history. So he challenged Baker, this artist, to come up with a new symbol. The suggestion is maybe he was inspired by Over the Rainbow, the Judy Garland song, because Judy Garland died a few days before the Stonewall riots. And so he came up with this rainbow flag, which has, Ben, how many colours?
Now, is it six?
It's now six.
Oh, it's now, it's now six, because obviously rainbows in nature have seven colours, and there's... Yeah. A whole furore about the numbers in physics and the numbers in the LGBTQ world. Oh, did it start off with four?
Started with eight. You had more.
Okay.
And each of the colours has an associated ethos or something with it. So you had hot pink for sex, Red for life, orange for healing, yellow for sunlight, green for nature, turquoise for magic slash art, indigo for serenity, and violet for spirit. Now it's missing sex and magic or art, hot pink and turquoise. There are a couple of reasons why that happened. There was a company, the Paramount Flag Company, began selling versions of the flag using seven stripes without the hot pink, because it was quite hard to get hot pink fabric, basically. And even when Gilbert started making, mass producing them, he wasn't able to get them, so it went down to seven colors. And then in 1979, the San Francisco Pride Parade wanted to split the flag in two to have two sides of the parade route with colors running down it, but obviously seven divided by two is an odd number.
I'm an accountant, I can tell you that doesn't work.
Yeah.
There you go, there's my input.
Thank you. So they dropped the turquoise stripe as well.
So really naively, I thought that the colours represented LGBTQAI.
No, in fact, there are lots of different flags for different, if you like, subgenres of queer people. Let's test you on some of them. Why not? Do you know what the bisexual flag looks like?
Blue and purple.
Yeah, it's magenta officially, but it's, yeah, magenta on the top, lavender or purple in the middle, and then blue on the bottom. The pansexual flag is quite cool. It's like a hot pink, yellow, and a light blue stripe. Demisexual, that's quite a recent addition to the...
Is that just you love watching Basic Instinct?
Doesn't demisexual mean you like the person's mind?
You have to be attracted to them, their personality. Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was sapiosexual, or it's sapios, you're attracted to their intelligence.
It's a similar-ish thing, I think. Yeah. Demisexual looks a bit, if you can imagine the South African flag, the way it has the sideways triangle on the left-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
got a white stripe on the top, a purple stripe in the middle, a grey stripe on the bottom, and then that triangle at the side is black.
Was it Mark Ronson who said he was sapiosexual?
Oh, yeah,
and
I think so.
And then people were like, oh, my God, he's part of the queer community. And then he quickly backtracked because he didn't really know what the word meant.
Yes. trans flag is the light blue stripes on top and bottom, pink stripes in the middle, and then a white stripe between those two pink stripes. What about shades of brown through yellow through white to grey to black with a paw print?
Oh, is that furries?
That's bears. There's the Bear Brotherhood flag. Oh. Not furries. And there's the Philadelphia Pride flag, which includes the people of color stripes. So it's the six stripes with a brown and a black stripe on the top as well. So it's got eight stripes.
If bears get their own flag, do they? And this is how years and years ago a gay friend told me that, oh, clearly I'm not a bear, but I'm not small enough to be a cub or a twink. So he said that I'm probably an otter.
Yeah.
Do otters have their own flag?
No, I think bear community has a flag because they've been such a prominent community throughout history.
Yeah.
Terminology like otter, I think, is fairly new, maybe.
To be fair, there's only really been a lesbian flag in the last few years. For a long time there wasn't. And I think in the late 90s they began using the black triangle pointing downwards, was because the pink triangle was used for gay men, the black triangle pointing downwards was used for sort of people who were considered antisocial, which included homosexual women, Romanies, and so on. So they used a purple flag with a black triangle pointing down, and the labrys, which is that double-headed axe, ancient Greek double-headed axe, which apparently is associated with lesbianism.
Which is quite cool. This is gonna sound like I'm being irreverent, but it's genuinely not. Yogi and Boo Boo. Are they icons in the gay community? And if not, why not? Because surely that's like a perfect bear relationship.
That's like combining like bearhood with like the whole pop culture as well. Yeah. If Boo Boo is Yogi's pup. Oh wait, are they related? That's probably pop. Wrong. Yeah.
No, they're mates.
They're not related. They're not related. The besties.
Okay. And Scrappy Doo and Scooby Doo, their nephew and uncle. Yeah, that's where.
Yeah,
wrong.
Yeah. I don't think there's a flag for that one.
There's not a flag for Scrappy-Doo Pride. hang on, I bet there is a puppy power pride flag.
We do have pups on the parade.
That's true. If people who don't know what pups are, they're the people you think are probably scary wearing the leather dog face masks.
I say, but they look really cute.
They look really cute. They're adorable on their leashes. And they're less likely to wet the bed, let's be honest. unless they're wearing a yellow handkerchief. But I read a bit more about pride flags. In 1989, John Stout sued his landlords and won when they tried to stop him from displaying the flag on his apartment balcony in West Hollywood. For the 25th anniversary of Stonewall in 1994, Baker, the guy who created the flag, was commissioned to create the world's largest rainbow flag, a mile-long flag dubbed Raise the Rainbow. He's done that again. In 2003, he did a mile-and-a-half-long one.
Mile long. I'm just trying to get my head around that.
Bit of a size queen when it comes to flags, Gilbert Baker. Oh, by the way, after Trump's election, Gilbert Baker added a ninth stripe in lavender above the hot pink stripe at the top to represent diversity. And he advocates going back to the original eight-stripe version where possible. But in 2004, LGBT activists from Australia sailed to the Coral Sea Islands territory and raised the rainbow flag, proclaiming an independent territory of Australia, calling it the Gay and Lesbian Kingdom of the Coral Sea Islands.
Yes, please.
Yeah, the rainbow flag has been used as the state flag of the Gay and Lesbian Kingdom. They were protesting the Australian government's refusal to recognise same-sex marriages, particularly marriages conducted abroad, not recognising Australians who then came back to Australia who were same-sex as married. And this place, the territory of the Coral Sea Islands, is just east of the Great Barrier Reef. My favourite bit about it is I was reading about it and the Wikipedia article has a section headed Rise of the Gay and Lesbian Kingdom. So immediately I was hooked. During Brisbane Pride, they decided that the marriage law wasn't going to be changed. They were advocating for it. And so basically, based on the law of unjust enrichment, which says if something is unjustly taken, compensation must be made. And with reference to international law, which states oppressed peoples of overseas territories have the right to self-government and self-determination, the activists claimed territorial compensation, establishing an independent gay state. Sailing on the 14th of June 2004 on a ship named the Gay Flower...
I'm absolutely here for that.
To Cato Island, raising the rainbow flag and declaring it an independent gay and lesbian state. They placed a memorial plaque on the island saying, on the 14th day of June 2004, at this highest point in the Coral Sea, Emperor Dale Parker Anderson raised the gay rainbow flag and claimed the islands of the Coral Sea in his name as homeland for the gay and lesbian peoples of the world. God save our king. A, missing a chance to say, God save our queen, but also he declared himself emperor at the start of this whole thing, so he's demoted himself by the sound of the end of it. They drafted a Declaration of Independence, which begins, homosexual people have honestly endeavoured everywhere to merge ourselves into the social life of surrounding communities and to be treated equally. We are not permitted to do so. In vain we are loyal patriots, our loyalty in some places running to extremes. In vain do we make the same sacrifices of life and property as our fellow citizens. In vain do we strive to increase the fame of our native land in science and art or her wealth by trade and commerce. In countries where we have lived for centuries, we are still cried down as strangers. In the world as it is now and for an indefinite period, I think we shall not be left in peace. Which is quite cool.
Yeah.
The activists founded a campsite on Cato Island, which they named Heaven, after the gay nightclub in London, which is the capital city. And the kingdom's national anthem is, of course, I Am What I Am. not only that, but in a scheme similar to the law of return in Israel, where you're automatically granted residency if you want to be as a Jew.
Yeah.
You're automatically
Aliyah, it is called.
Aliyah. You're automatically and immediately eligible for citizenship in the gay and lesbian kingdom of the Coral Sea Islands simply by being gay or lesbian. They issued their first stamps in July 2006. Their kingdom's website states that tourism, fishing and stamp sales are its only economic activities. On the 13th of September 2004, the gay kingdom declared war on Australia.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
Amazing. I mean, guys, like, surely we all want them to be accepted into the Olympics, so hopefully someone can win an event and the pride flag can be raised whilst I Am What I Am is blasted out of the speakers of the stadium.
I bring you sad news. In February 2017, Senator Eric Abetz, who voted against marriage equality in Australia, he objected to the rainbow flag being displayed in the Department of Finance, saying, this particular flag is the flag of the Gay and Lesbian Kingdom of the Coral Sea Islands, which has declared war on Australia. It is the flag of a hostile nation, if we are to believe them.
I mean,
arguing
I mean,
they shouldn't be flying the flag. Yeah.
he's a prick, but he's gone down the right channels there to make his point.
No, in late 2016, their official website added a link to point people to the website of the Equality Campaign, which advocated for a yes vote in the Australian Marriage Law Postal Survey. And following the decision by the Australian people to legalise same-sex marriage, self-proclaimed Emperor Matthew Briggs declared the kingdom dissolved on the 17th of November 2017.
See, the way that, I mean, obviously I met that vote was won, but just to make sure, they should have gone, hey, do you want to vote to abolish a gay kingdom in the Pacific? And then loads of bigots would have voted to get rid of that, and then you would have got an even more overwhelming victory.
Yeah, I just love it. I really want to visit. I'm so sad when I saw it didn't exist anymore. But I'm going to talk about straight pride as the world's worst pride, but of course... Mufseen, do you want to tell people why straight pride is a terrible idea? Because I'm so tired. tired about reading it for the last hour.
Look, but can I just say, Barry, we are deeply underrepresented. I can't do it.
The straights really need to have a voice in this world because they're always oppressed. And they don't have any months because, you know, gays are really selfish having Pride Month.
Yeah.
And they deserve to have straight months.
Let me tell you about straight pride and how bad it is, and then you can tell us about the good pride.
All right, okay, cool.
Yeah, let's have the case for the prosecution and the case for the defence, I think, is the right way around to do it.
Yeah, and straight pride, the slogan straight pride began sort of rose up in the 80s and early 90s. If you're the sort of person who thinks, oh, what a reasonable idea, well, the people who are using it are social conservatives and people who are anti-LGBT rights. It's not that people are pro straight rights. It's used as a way of diminishing the importance of gay rights. For example, in 1988, the Vermont Republican John Berger asked the state's governor to establish a straight pride day. In 1990, there were rallies in support of straight pride at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst and at nearby Mount Holyoke College. The University of Massachusetts event was promoted as Burn a Fag in Effigy Rally. The conservative organisations at the same place held another event the very next year, attended by about 50 people and protested by a crowd about 10 times larger. A running theme with these straight pride events, we will discover. In May 2005, the northern Canadian city of Yellowknife announced that it would mark both a gay and a straight pride day. The mayor proclaimed June the 10th as Gay Pride Day, and a councillor, Alan Wojtyuk, proposed it to be a heterosexual day. The mayor agreed, thinking he was just being, you know, a nice general equal rights for everybody type guy, and set it for June 9th, the day beforehand. The councillor who proposed it defended his suggestion by saying, it recognises the contributions of heterosexuals is just as legitimate as recognising the contributions of gay and lesbian communities, because if there's one thing history has shown us is that straight people have never, ever been commemorated for doing anything. The group seeking the Gay Pride Day designation basically said, if we have Black History Month, can we have a White Heritage Month? Also, if we're marking heart disease and stroke, should we have days celebrating good health?
Awareness gone mad.
I'm sure you're going to tell me what Straight Pride's flag looks like, but I imagine instead of a rainbow, it's just some drizzle drawn on a pair of chinos.
it's nearly as unimaginative as that.
Is it the black and white stripes?
It's just black and white stripes with an intertwined, you know, the symbols for men and women.
What?
Yeah.
The gays have colour.
You're telling me that as a Newcastle United fan, I've been supporting straight pride for all my life.
I don't know how to break it to you any clearer, Ben. Your club is now, terrible and you should never support it.
Now it makes sense why Saudi Arabia are trying to take us over.
Yeah. I quite like this. In 2015, in Seattle, Washington, an artist, Anthony Rebello, arranged a heterosexual pride parade in the Capitol Hill neighborhood of Seattle, at which he was the only person to march. And they had one in Helsinki in Finland in 2011. But contrary to most straight pride parades, this article says, the Helsinki Gay Pride Parade march organisers arranged themselves as part of the Gay Pride Parade as an outlet for heterosexuals to show their straight allyship. So they were part of the Pride Parade. But they took the straight pride thing, saying we're straight people for gay pride.
Right, so they were marching as allies.
Yes, they turned it on itself.
Good. That's sort of nice, but also sort of don't make it about you guys. Just shut the fuck up and march.
I think it's like important to know that you're a guest at that space if you're a straight person.
Yeah,
that's the main thing.
Well, like when you say, Ben, like, it's not about you. You're more than welcome to come, obviously, but you don't necessarily need to have that space.
Yes.
Because you have that space every day.
Exactly.
Yep, precisely.
Straight Pride really hit the headlines last year, though, in the summer. An organization called, and I think we mentioned them, Ben, Super Happy Fun America, announced that they'd be having a Straight Pride parade in Boston to protest Boston's LGBTQ pride. This parade even had, you know, a dinosaur. And you think, cool, dinosaur, again, probably reflecting people's ideals at this thing.
The dinosaurs definitely weren't gay. I remember this from school, whenever tedious homophobes would go, it's not natural, you'd go, can I introduce you to the entire fucking animal kingdom?
Yes.
But that means that surely there must have been gay dinosaurs.
Of course. Have you seen the T-Rex?
Yeah. The little dangly little wrists. But also... Yeah. The ones who fan out their neck things. That's like a drag queen, you know, doing a fan clack. That's amazing.
That's exactly what it is. Well, yeah, not least because how do they respond when they're threatened? They spit venom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, the dinosaur they had at the Straight Pride Parade is, you know, those crappy inflatable T-Rex costumes? Was that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the city of Boston showed up in massive numbers to counter protests. There were a couple of hundred people at the Boston Straight Pride, which, by the way, their grand marshal was right-wing provocateur, for want of a better word, Milo Yiannopoulos.
Who now?
Milo Yiannopoulos, a gay man.
No, never heard of him now.
Yeah, happily cancelled, I think, since then. He addressed the crowd, calling to add the S to LGBTQ. His couple of hundred people were outnumbered by the thousand or so counter-protesters. And if people are still in doubt as the aims of the Super Happy Fun Time America group, they were created in 2017 by Kyle Chapman, who founded another group called the Fraternal Order of the Alt Knights a week after the Charlottesville Unite the Right riot.
Oh boy!
Yeah, that's the people you're getting into bed with. They were the victims of a postal terror campaign in July 2019 when envelopes filled with glitter were mailed to them. For people who think, oh, why don't we have a straight pride just casually, it's a terrible misunderstanding of why we have gay pride. And for the people who know exactly what they're doing, like the organizers of this organization, it's double reason for me to think that the world's worst pride is straight pride.
The Venn diagram of straight pride and white pride is a circle. But and both gay culture and black culture, and that's very reductive, but because it is so joyous and overblown and fecund in every direction it goes, that whenever you look at, like, some of these people, these boring, straight, white, almost always men, are struggling with the fact that identity-wise, they have nothing interesting or exotic about them, and they're like, oh well, that means I'm oppressed that way. It's like, no, you have freedom to get into, like, mountain biking or lacrosse or whatever you want. But do you know what I mean?
Nickelback and darts.
Yeah. That's just the sort of thing that people from the queer lobby would say, Barry.
The queer lobby has fabulous interior decor, by the way.
So I'm from Brighton, known for its big gay Brighton Pride. And back in 2014, there was a group called the Brighton Cannabis Club, which decided to have their own version of Pride called Green Pride, which is essentially a gathering at Preston Park, which is where Brighton Pride is held.
Yeah.
But instead of being proud about being LGBT, this would be a lot of people who would show up and smoke weed. And they call it a pro festival, so a protest festival, advocating for the legalization of weed and cannabis. So I don't want to sound like someone who doesn't like weed or cannabis. I'm not. I'm also pro. My issue with them using the word pride is because I know that how much meaning that has for the LGBT community. So it almost feels like using green pride, the words pride specifically, and I know we can't trademark pride or copyright pride because it's just a word, but it carries a weight there. And I feel like the co-opting of the word pride is just, it touches a lot of nerves for a lot of people, I think.
Mm. Yeah, well, and also, and speaking as someone who very much enjoys and enjoyed a lot more smoking marijuana, there are quite a lot of dope smokers who practice that in replacement of having an actual personality.
Going back to your previous point.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Well done them for having, you know, any energy at all to organise something, though. I'm impressed.
Yeah, but like three waves of the Green Pride flag and they are done.
Yeah, Green Pride also presumably for people who are into prostitution and hustling, as we learned earlier.
So many meanings for colours at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, back in 2014, there was only 100 of them. But every year, especially 2018, thousands showed up. So it's become really, really popular, and they have stalls with like 25 to 30 businesses. So it's kind of becoming a, you know, a proper event. Like you would have these small local prides. It's kind of becoming that size.
Yeah. Are they able to send organized. Up? They're able to send up smoke signals, presumably to spread the word even further.
It does say in their description on their Facebook page, like, we want the clouds to be smokier. Rather than, like, you know, we want the clouds to be blue and sunny.
Yeah.
Dope smokers, they've got their own day. It's more of an American thing, but 420. I can't remember why the 20th of April is international.
It was going to be the 18th, but they forgot. I've seen you say a similar thing, and I sort of agree with you that about co-opting the rainbow flag, as has been done recently to honour the NHS. A good and noble and worthy thing to do. But... Yep. When you go as far as, was it in Southampton where they reappropriated some buses?
The Plymouth buses.
That's
when it kind of kicked off on social media and on the newspapers. That a Pride bus, that they, you normally have this bus with the six stripe flag. Plymouth Bus Company decided to just replace the word Pride with NHS and then call it the NHS flag or the NHS bus.
So
I think that kind of obvious you know, take a sticker off, put a sticker back on, call it something different for a different season or a different festival, that is just quite insensitive to both the NHS support the workers cause and the Pride cause. Kind of saying that both are kind of, you know, we'll do minimal effort.
Or similarly, Matt Hancock wearing an NHS Pride pin, a very specific purpose. It's for LGBTQ plus people within the NHS. It's not the same as painting a rainbow on your house to support the NHS.
Yeah, so I've been quite vocal about this. You talk about the rainbow being a symbol for this pandemic and for hope. That originated in Europe. The UK adopted that as part of, you know, the whole solidarity, support NHS workers. But because there's already the NHS badge initiative in hospitals, where NHS staff wear rainbow lanyards, rainbow badges, to send a signal to any LGBT patients and doctors, like, I am LGBT inclusive and you can talk to me about any LGBT related issues, which is very important for especially trans people, which full disclosure of medical history, including the fact that you're transgender, is very important for you to get proper healthcare and to have a doctor who, you know, because they're wearing a lanyard or a rainbow badge, that they won't judge you for being trans, they won't judge you for being gay, and that it's a safe space. When you start using rainbows to support the NHS in general, that's a good idea, but it's destroying those safe spaces in hospitals because it confuses the message.
Gosh, I never thought about it like that. Of course, I live in a very LGBTQ inclusive bubble amongst, and it is a fine bubble, and the lovely thing about bubbles is that they refract light into a rainbow, but I never appreciated that something as simple as a lanyard or a badge or laces has those ramifications, that in a hospital it may indeed be life or death in certain situations, but at the very least it's ill health or good health.
The other thing that sort of struck me is that, you know, for supporting the NHS, doesn't the NHS have blue and white as its colours anyway?
Yeah, exactly.
It has its own colours.
Yes, but you don't want people to be putting up blue and white stripes in their windows. People will think, God, there's a lot of Sheffield Wednesday fans that appeared all of a sudden.
You could do a blue sky with white clouds, you know?
Yeah.
And then the rainbow comes afterwards.
We've come into Pride Month now, and a lot of the NHS flags and rainbows are still out there.
Yes.
And now, coming out of the hospital context into just walking down the street, every time I see a rainbow, I'm just like, is this an NHS one or is this a Pride one?
Yeah.
And this is the issue with co-opting symbols for multiple uses in the same space, is it confuses both messages.
Yeah.
And that's why when I'm talking about Green Pride, it's Brighton Green Pride. But you know, you kind of know that it's a completely different cause, but using the same word, there it gets confusing, and it's not necessarily, in my opinion, like the best way to go about supporting a cause.
They could have gone with the Feast of St. Mary Jane. Would you mind telling us a bit about the history of the Pride movement?
The history of the Pride movement. So last year we celebrated Stonewall 50. And that was celebrated mostly in New York Pride.
Yeah.
The what we would call the origin of the Pride movement.
Yeah. Because I'd say a lot of non-LGBT people would have heard of Stonewall, but not necessarily know what it was or what the context of it is.
Yeah, so Stonewall is actually the Stonewall Inn, which is a pub in Greenwich Village, Manhattan, in the 60s. This was a very discreet kind of speakeasy pub for queer people. And the pub was obviously, it was there on the street, but it was disguised as a gentleman's club. So you would only be able to go in if the bouncer knew you or if you kind of looked queer. It was very common in those times for police raids to happen. And it would happen so often that actually the organizers would sometimes get a call from the police saying like, hey, we're going to do a raid tonight, and people would be ready and they'll make sure there was less cash in the till and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it just became routine to have raids, and people were kind of getting fed up with it because it was disrupting their evenings, disrupting the performances or, you know, the activities that are happening there. You couldn't see the handkerchiefs.
Yeah.
But the Stonewall Uprising happened on the 27th of June, 1969. And this was a raid that happened at Stonewall. So, like I said, it was quite common. But I think this raid just was a bit too aggressive. So the police were really like patting people down. There was reports of people being assaulted in the sense that they were, police were checking gender fluid people's body parts. Which is, you know, just super intrusive. But this riot kind of kicked off with this raid, and people were kind of hitting back at the police. The police were shouting back. And at one point, the police went back into the pub because the commotion kind of came out of the pub and then they went back in. So there was a point in the evening where the police were locked into the pub and all the queer people were outside. And the queer people were majority people of color, lesbians, trans, and effeminate gays. So these were like the marginalized version, subgenre of LGBT.
Yeah.
This raid was just like one raid too many. It caused a huge uprising on the day. More police were called. And it was your very classic anti-police brutality riot or uprising.
Yeah.
Which we kind of know now in the context of Black Lives Matter, like how corrupt the police can be.
Yeah.
On that evening, there were activists like Martha P. Johnson, who was always quoted as being the first person to throw the brick into Stonewall. So these activists and just queer people, part of the community, we're all here having a big uprising. And the next day, that's when the queer community started getting organized, saying like, well, we're done with this, we need to start a movement. And ever since that day, we've had Pride in June. And that day was called Christopher Street Liberation Day, named after the street that Stonewall is on. And it was at its core an anti-police brutality uprising. And that's quite important to remember.
Yeah.
And in the same year, the Gay Liberation Front, the GLF, was formed in the US. And this was a group of queer people, gay men, who formed together in the same year, 1969, and kind of had a wider remit for fighting against inequality and discrimination against LGBT individuals.
Sorry, I'm just going to let Ben have a moment to... As I realise, Ben is trying very hard to listen to how serious you're being and not commenting on the fact that it was the year 69. So I'm very proud of you, Ben, for not doing that.
Thank you,
I can just
Barry.
See it behind the eyes.
Yeah, the gays died in 69. They thought it would be symbolic. Yeah. Pure liberation.
Yeah.
So the first gay liberation protest happened in New York in 1969. And the Gay Liberation Front started, people got more organized, more groups happened, and people started fighting for our rights, fighting for our right to engage in same-sex sex and have relationships and also fight for same-sex marriage equality, which we obviously got in the UK in the next century. Yeah. And the GLF in the UK started just a year later. So the movement didn't just start and end in New York. It really had a ripple effect across all countries.
Yeah.
And the UK we had our first London Pride in 1972. So our 50th anniversary will be in 2 years' time, and it will be a day to, you know, celebrate, but also reflect on how far we've come in 50 years. And in those 50 years, we've had activists like Andrew Lumsden, Ted Brown, who started the GLF in the UK. We've also had Peter Tatchell, who is still very vocal in the LGBT movement. And then throughout the decades, we've had Ian McKellen come out and Elton John come out, and they've been vocal activists as well as celebrities in their own right. So it's important to have these advocates throughout history, but we've all been rallying around this Pride movement because there are so many different rights to fight for. So you might see London Pride and big events look like a big celebration, having Pride as like a big awareness, so a reminder that we, you know, queer people exist. It's important to have that because we've seen in recent legislation, like, it's so easy to for one government to come in and things to unwind.
Yeah, in the week we're recording this, the government is seemingly shelving the right of trans people to basically self-identification.
The Gender Recognition Act, which has been in consultation for 2 years, has just been scrapped because the opinion of some people on the Twitterverse is they didn't get the answer they wanted.
And I think you can quite cynically also say that the government are looking for anything to distract from all sorts of things they're fucking up. And very often when you're looking for someone to use as a distraction, it can be some of the most marginalized people in society, and that is who trans people are.
They've decided that it's time that they and JK Rowling lined up on the same team.
I mean, I'm sure her words and her blog post had some say, because it legitimizes the government to do that, and it gives them the arguments of, we are going to protect same-sex spaces and therefore really damage spaces for trans and non-binary people who don't fit into that binary, and they don't know. I know it sounds really trivial to talk about toilets, because everyone keeps talking about toilets, but people just literally just want to live their lives in the way they want to identify.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what the Pride movement's been about right from the beginning, because it was started by trans people and people of color.
Yeah. It's a bit similar to how the Black Lives Movement protests have suddenly been diverted by people who want to divert it into talking about protecting statues and fucking faulty towers.
Yeah.
Trans rights and self-identification and gender recognition is not about, it's not just about where people want to take a piss, but that's the thing people want to talk about all the time.
Mm.
Well, it's just, and the two things with it is one is that, I can't remember who it is, but a trans activist who I followed on Twitter just said, here's the thing, like, being trans is like the eighth most interesting thing about me, and I don't think about being trans all day. I think about being like a daughter and a sister, but more than that, I think about whatever job I have, who I fancy, what I'm going to have for dinner, what I'm going to watch on the telly. I mean, I don't know. I am not a trans person, but I don't really think about being white and straight that much.
And that, Ben, is privilege.
No, you're absolutely right. Of course it is. The other thing with the Gender Recognition Act, just in case there are people who don't know, it's not like it's trans people and trans allies in the United Kingdom who are going, oh, we should do this thing. It's been put in on the statute books in a huge variety of countries where it's been non-controversial and it's worked, and more importantly, it's improved and eased the lives of trans people.
Yeah.
And I think people who don't understand what trans and non-binary people are about, they're kind of scared of the terminology, because there's a lot of new words happening. Words like non-binary have not been used that much until recently. Well, some people will think, oh no, this is all new words, oh, I don't like it, where have these people come from?
Yeah.
But it's important to remember that trans and non-binary people have existed forever, and there's so many points in history I can point to. Even in, so I'm South Asian, even in India and Bangladesh and Pakistan, there is hijra community, which is a recognized third gender.
Yeah.
And the Americas, there's a recognized third gender there as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've talked about on the show the Emperor Elagabalus, the Roman Emperor Elagabalus, who is a, if you like, a trans icon in his own magazines to cross-dress and acted in what would have been considered a feminine manner.
Yeah.
Albeit that emperor is not the best role model for trans people, considering some of his other wayward behaviours.
He did drown some dinner guests under a tidal wave of rose petals on one occasion. Yes, yeah.
I mean, I think the problem is that a lot of this is all, but it's bound up in colonialism as well, because it's very easy for British or American or, let's face it, white people to go, yes, I know you're saying that historically these cultures in the pre-American United States or South Asia has all these things, but we colonized them and taught them our smart European way, so they should get over that nonsense. It's so easy to whitewash trans history.
Whereas actually most of the anti-LGBT laws on the statute books in a lot of the Commonwealth countries are gifted to them by the colonial overlords. Yeah.
They've civilized those countries.
But you've decided to go with Green Pride as your worst option.
Given the history of what it means to have Pride movement, the co-opting of the word Pride is pretty terrible. And I think it's overlooked because, like you say, Ben, you knew that there was an issue between having a rainbow as a symbol for the NHS support, but not really thinking a bit further into how it affects people. And that's where sometimes something like a rainbow or a word like pride is actually really important to the people who need it.
Yeah.
And then to take that for something else can seem like a very arbitrary thing, but actually it can be quite damaging.
Yeah. For a country where they're so hot on tradition and symbolism and stuff, it's so easy. They don't care about it so much when it's people who don't look or act like them who have a problem with it.
Yeah. So I'm bringing Green Pride to the table.
Nice. Pass it round.
Actually, yeah. We spoke a lot about the meaning of pride, and it because it is one of the seven deadly sins, it has been debated by all sorts of different theologians and philosophers. Saint Augustine talked about pride being the love of one's own excellence, and a Islamic scholar, Meher Baba, describes it as the specific feeling through which egoism manifests. I think a lot of the problems that we have amongst often good people who are bewitched by bad arguments and bad faith is a lack of the understanding of context. Pulling down statue A is a bad idea because that person maybe did the odd bad thing but didn't own human beings, whereas pulling down statue B of Edward Colston, contextually, that he owned 84,000 human beings and the statue was put up 100 years after he died. Context. And I think the word pride, you might want to go, well, I'm happy in my own skin, I'm proud of myself. You could even argue I am proud of my straightness or whiteness, although there's not that much to be proud about. But it's the misunderstanding that the word pride was brought up because people weren't to be allowed to be proud of their queerness or their blackness or anything else, and so it's lifting yourself up from having the pride squeezed out of you via society. But the problem is, like so many things, is that's quite difficult to put on the side of a mug. Anyway, I'm going to start with something quite lovely that I found, which is probably the most remote celebration of pride on Earth, which is at Antarctica's McMurdo Science Station. And it looks like for at least the past decade, they have celebrated Pride there. And a couple of years ago, it was described as one of the largest parties they'd ever thrown there. There's about 133 people there, and about 10 of them identify as LGBTQ, which is, you know, it fits the stats, doesn't it, lads?
Yeah.
And it's really sweet. The Evan Townsend, who works there, says, I hope when people see this photo, which is a photo of them freezing their nuts off and with a rainbow flag, they'll be reminded that LGBTQ people aren't limited into a place, a culture, or a climate. We're important and valuable members of every community, even at the bottom of the world.
Or the top.
Or the... well done, Barry, for slam dunking the joke that I couldn't make, but I could assist.
Did they invite those gay penguins to it?
Yeah.
They should have invited the gay penguin dads to the parade.
Oh, they should have done. I presume that the gay penguin dads were the choreography directors on Happy Feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's really lovely. Another person who organised it said, because even on the most inhospitable place on earth, there's still people who will love and respect you no matter who you are. Oh, it's great, isn't it?
That's cute.
So I looked at two prides. Both of them, lads, are going to make you want to eat your insides at shame, because at least with Green Pride, you can make the argument with poor foundations, but at least some, that smoking marijuana is illegal in this country and the people are made to feel ashamed for doing something that they would argue is a natural, bountiful, life-enriching thing. However, in 1998, a chap called Tim McGeachan created Geek Pride. Just to say that is G-E-E-K. That is not a nationalist movement being taken up in northern Cyprus. Two private events that were put on in New York between 1998 and 2000. The middle floor of the event, I mean, it's basically a really shit Comic-Con.
I was going to say.
They had an email garden comprising a dozen tables with PCs running Red Hat Linux in a wired LAN network, providing email web and general internet access. Please, gentlemen, withhold your steaming erections as I say this.
Linux.
Yeah. They had a number of guests who, I don't know, might have been a big noise during the dot-com boom, but I've not heard of any of them. But they also had a video game cover band whose name was Everyone, which I have to say is a truly awful name for a band, but I presume just doing, you know, covers of the Mario theme tune or, you know, whatever, Mario, Mortal
Tetris.
Kombat sound effects.
Tetris. I tell you what, though, you want to get Kraftwerk to do a remix of Tetris. That's who you want.
They also had a trivia quiz entitled Stump the Geek, which, I'll be honest, sounds like one of the weirdest things you could do at a fetish club. But to their credit, and I guess ahead of their time, they also had a poll for the greatest geek hero, and the winner was Alan Turing.
I mean, well done them. Good.
Yeah, well done then. They also, this is my favourite, Geek Pride. In 2006, in Madrid, there were 300 geeks who demonstrated their pride together by creating a human Pac-Man.
A human Pac-Man.
I presume that it's like they all dressed in, they all put yellow T-shirts on and formed a human Pac-Man.
Oh, like viewed from above.
A picture with a drone.
Viewed from above, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They also released a manifesto. Now, obviously, I know we should be very wary of any white men. And let's be fair, these will almost certainly have been all white men who release a manifesto. But here we are, lads. Let's go through it. Red pens at the ready. our rights. Firstly, it's 16. So, you know, like all geeks, they're not very good at brevity. One, the right to be even geekier. Two, the right not to leave your house. Three, the right not to like football or any other sport. Four, the right to associate with other nerds. Five, the right to have few friends or none at all. Six, the right to have as many geeky friends as you want, which very much contradicts number five. Yeah. right number to be seven, the right to be out of style. Bad luck, lads, you've taken over the earth now. Eight, the right to be overweight and nearsighted. I mean, that's just not fair. Some geeks are buff and don't need spectacles. Nine, the right to show off your geekiness. This is now when it gets very granular.
I'm just worried about how many of these boxes we're ticking, Ben.
Yeah,
as hosts of the comedy trivia podcast,
we're alpha geeks. It's fine. 10, the right to make an attempt at being as geeky as Morgana Summers, and the right to fail.
Who?
Precisely. Number 11, the right to develop serious crushes on Randall Monroe. Nope. Shea Carruth. No. And Bo Burnham. Absolutely. As opposed to, say, James Franco. Number 12, the right to carry a thesaurus with you at all times as opposed to an iPhone.
Right.
What?
Right. 13, the right to execute shameless self-advertisement via the Wikipedia Geek Pride Day. 14, the right to falsely assume the surnames Finkelton, Waldman, Stratzer, and Krukemeyer. Can I just say, that really does stink a little bit of anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
15, the right to quote Firefly XKCD or both whenever at all possible. And 16, the right to take over the world. Again, stinks of anti-Semitism.
Just out of interest, don't people have, I mean, apart from the last one, don't people have the right to do all of those things anyway?
They do. They really, really do.
Because the whole thing with gay pride is we haven't had the right, and still don't in lots of places around the world, the right to do some of those things.
Yeah. All I'm going to say, my only bone of sympathy I could have with Geek Pride Day is obviously there is the horror of gay conversion that we've talked about on this show before, but if you have to partake in gay conversion therapy, there is only a limited number of premises and what that happens, whereas geeks would argue that they have all had to go through geek conversion therapy because that's called physical education. That's the best I can offer them. But, gentlemen, for my suggestion of the world's worst pride...
Just before you get that, I'm also really sad for the one Greek guy who shows up at one of these things.
Yeah.
And misread the advert.
Yeah, I've got all my plates. I've got my dolmadas.
I want to be even Greekier.
I kind of just want all the geeks to have friends and just to be allowed to be proud.
It's really difficult if you want to go to Geek Pride, but also you're one of those who subscribes to Tenet, whatever it was, 2 or 3, which says you have the right to not have any friends.
But my suggestion for the world's worst pride is another community that you could argue historically have suffered a great deal of prejudice and oppression, but in the modern world, really not. Gentlemen, it's time to talk about pagan pride.
Yes.
Does that exist?
Oh, yes.
You do enough of the episodes of this podcast, you learn that there's a pagan version of literally fucking everything.
You just made me think. No, there is not, as far as I can see, a Klingon pride movement. But I have seen a meme with the Stonewall, some people are gay, get over it, but translated into Klingon.
Nice.
Obviously, paganism, it's a bit of a catch-all term for all sorts of pre-Christian beliefs, but a lot of it focuses on Nordic belief systems and quite pantheistic belief systems. And there's a lot to be said for it, you know, finding communion with the natural world. Listen, a lot of the Norse mythology is cracking storytelling, but a lot of it is woo-woo New Age crystal-smelling guff. And whilst pagans may have suffered prejudice and oppression, 1500 years ago at the hands of early Christians, they're not really suffering now. Often they look like these events, the sort of fields at Glastonbury that you will wander into, do a quick 180 and wander out of again. They are, you know, when you think of, again, whilst there is very important and not even undercurrents, overcurrents of Black Pride and gay Pride, they're also a banging party, and let us never forget that. Whereas pagan Pride is often tables full of reading material staffed by members of a range of neo-pagan denominations. Speakers or workshops may focus on dispelling common misconceptions about neo-paganism. Now, I appreciate that sort of thing is very important to things like gay Pride, but you know that after that's all over and done with it, at pagan Pride, you're just going to be having some warm, flat cider and listening to terrible folk music.
There's also going to be a lot more sandals and North Face jackets.
So many. I mean, some of the events at these include chanting. Apparently, there is a pagan Pride comedy. You can spin tails. There are drum circles. In a newspaper article I read, they met someone called Amy Mockricky. This is in Pittsburgh, and she has a booth there containing jewellery, books, candles, oils, tarot cards, and other bric-a-brac that she's stolen from astrology stores. But she refers to it as her metaphysical haven. To their credit, at this particular Pride event, they donated 23 units of blood to a local blood bank.
Sacrificial blood, presumably.
Yeah, of course. Well, apparently she said, I think they thought we were bikers, but that didn't seem to faze them. and listen, they seem to be lovely people. They donated money to the local food bank. They donated cash and pet food to local shelters. But As well as the Animal Friend shelters, they also donated money specifically to shelters that looked after ferrets, because many pagans are apparently ferret owners.
Hugely offensive term, Ben. You ferret owner.
Do pagans own ferrets?
Apparently they're quite popular as familiars. Apparently in Pittsburgh there is even a local animal charity called Planned Ferrethood, because a ferret is for life, not just for All Souls Eve. They meet a drummer, and he's got like an authentic pagan drum, and they ask him, do you have to use animal skins to make your drums? Can you use a substitute? And he says, no, only animal skins produce the proper sound, which gives full glory and appeasement to the lords and ladies. He then adds, if there was another way, I'd use it, because I am a vegan.
Oh my god. It's hard living on the intersect of different cultures, eh?
Yeah.
Yes, I do feel that this is the point at which intersectionality can stop now. We found the limits and the borders of intersectionality. And as of course, pagans are welcome at gay pride and theoretically are welcome at black pride. Not that there are any black pagans. Our pagan friends clearly went on a journey as well, because at Pittsburgh Pagan Pride, two Allegheny County police officers appeared at the pagan picnic saying they'd received a complaint that there was drug paraphernalia there. Shock horror. They found nothing, and as the pagan said, we spoke to the police, we prayed for them, and they prayed for us. And there, ladies and gentlemen, is everything that is wrong with modern America. Our suggestions this week for the world's worst pride come in three varieties. Barry has come up with straight pride, Mufsin has come up with green pride, and I have come up with pagan pride, who probably would have used the word green pride for their pride movement had it not been stolen by the stoners. But, you know, if you can't outsmart a stoner and they're quicker than you, you need to have a word. Lads, this is absolutely the quickest decision I have ever made, and it's a delight to award the title to myself. It's definitely Barry. It's definitely straight pride, because obviously they're just the worst.
So in many ways, Ben, you are still claiming the title. Congratulations to you in this Pride month. I'm so happy for you and your fellow straights.
All I can say is that I am delighted about the two lackluster blowies that I attempted to give at university that mean that I don't have to throw my lot in with those lot. Yeah. I according to that, I'm very slightly bi with a lowercase b and a tiny little I. Before we go, it's time for the world's best news of the week, which will be continuing until life returns to normal. And this is just a hat tip to a remarkable woman called Kathy Sullivan, because she has achieved a truly outstanding world's first, because very recently she went aboard Challenger Deep and went to a depth of 10,928 meters in the Western Pacific Ocean as part of the Ring of Fire expedition. Now, why is that so remarkable? Well, it's an incredible thing to do, but lots of people have done it before. But
Johnny Cash for one.
Yeah. But Kathy Sullivan is the first astronaut to do that. So she has been to the deepest place on Earth and into space.
Wow!
Incredible, right? She listened to Mountain Deep, Valley High and thought, I'll see you and raise you, Ike and Tina.
Wow, how bud must her housemates be that she wants to get that far away from them so often? Because I didn't feel sick enough in space, I thought I'd go and get the bends as well.
Yeah, no, of course. There's like, obviously, if you're during this lockdown struggling with how little you've achieved in your life, don't compare yourself to Kathy Sullivan. But otherwise, hat tip to that. Before we go our separate ways, Mufsin, where can people find you and what can they find you doing when they get there?
Well, you can just find me on Instagram or Twitter. If you want to hear me talk about Pride stuff, it's best to go on Twitter. And that's just at Mufsin. That's my name.
And your podcast, again, for people is?
And the podcast is at Queer Talk. So we're into season one, and we're going to wrap up with a Pride episode as well soon.
What an original idea.
Yeah.
I'm glad we finally got round to doing one 4 years into the podcast.
Yeah, me too. We're all off to Jewish Pride, which I'm taking you two guys with. And if you don't know what Jewish Pride is, it's just thousands of mothers parading along with megaphones going, "Did you know my son is a doctor?" Until next week, goodbye, everyone.
Bye. Happy Pride.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @Podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.